folks, welcome back to Indaba Africa. This is Chris once again. Hello, folks. Welcome back to Indaba Africa News of the Day. This is Chris on this Saturday, the 3rd of April, 2021, just the day before Easter Sunday. Straight to the news headlines from around Africa. The Southern African Development Community has finally convened an emergency meeting to address the Cabo Delgado crisis. This occurred within the last hour. It comes 2 days after SADC had promised action over events unfolding in the horrific carnage and gruesome activity taking place by ISIS-linked radical insurgents, Islamists, in northern Mozambique. As the Dyke Group, the private security contractor's contract expires on the 6th of April, it appears that Mozambicans in Cabo Delgado province will be largely left to their own devices, undefended, as these ghouls run amok throughout the province. Meanwhile, the FATM, the Mozambican military, seems to be focused only on defending Total's assets in the region. For its part, Total has withdrawn all of its expatriate nationals from the region, at least that according to multiple news reports. The attempted coup in Niamey, Niger, on the 31st of March came just 2 days before the first ever democratic transition in the 60-year history of Niger. On the 2nd of April, Mohamed Bazoum was sworn in the first ever democratic transition of power from one democratically elected leader to another in the 60-year history of Niger. This, of course, came amid tight security following a coup attempt just 2 days prior. YouTube has deleted 2.5 million dislikes from the Biden administration's White House YouTube account. Zimbabwe has banned imports of cars older than 10 years old. And Eswatini has finally begun its COVID-19 vaccination program. This started on the 31st of March. Those over the age of 60 will be first in line. They are the priority. Zambia has lifted its onion import ban. And Angola expects to realize $67.4 billion in oil sector investment over the coming 5 years. PLAN, the People's Liberation Army from Namibia, PLAN veterans will not allow President Kingab to be removed. This comes amid new allegations that Kingab is deeply involved in the fishy, no pun intended, fish rot scandal or other fishing-related scandals. The Namibian has been doing an expose. Two parts have been released, contending that President Kingab is complicit, is guilty of corruption. And in a preemptive move very much akin to Mkhonto Sizwe Veterans Organization in South Africa, these so-called military veterans seem to think that they're above the rest of society and they can dictate what will happen in the democratic process. The International Monetary Fund has loaned Namibia $4 billion Namibian dollars, or $271 million. Namibia's defense minister, Peter Vilho, is in hot water. This over allegations he has an offshore banking account. And those are the headlines for today, the 3rd of April, 2021. More in-depth analysis and conversation about these news topics now. So welcome to the party, SADC. 3 years after the carnage began, a full decade after this insurgency started to gain ground and others warned you of it. Only now, after bodies hacked to pieces, South African nationals murdered, British nationals murdered, only now is SADC finally considering doing something about this situation. SADC has a history of getting involved in regional peacekeeping enforcement actions, including Operation Boleas in Lesotho in 1998-1999, in which South African National Defense Forces were routed by villagers carrying shotguns and rifles, and the Botswana Defense Force soldiers on joint patrols with them looked around and said, "What's going on here?" And one of the early performances of the abysmal conduct of the South African National Defense Force, Operation Boleas. SANDF was also involved in more than one attempt to go into the Comoros to restore order there. So it's not unprecedented for SADC to take military action, but it certainly has been a situation that's been ignored entirely by SADC. The Southern African Development Community has called an urgent meeting for next week, during which it will discuss the situation in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province. The meeting has been called by Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi, who is also the chairperson of SADC, Organ of Politics, Defense, and Security, comes after Mokgweetsi engaged leaders of the SADC region, including Ramaphosa, on further intervention in the matter. Now, the situation in Cabo Delgado province is not only getting bad, it's getting far worse. It's far worse as now these insurgents have vehicles at their disposal, which they've pilfered, and they have resources in what appeared to be a very well orchestrated and planned attack on the town of Palma, which has led to gruesome, gruesome outcome. Thousands of people have fled, tens of thousands, and over 1,200 were repatriated by ferry to Pemba recently, saved from the situation in Palma. Masisi says member states of SADC will respond in a meaningful manner to the deadly Islamist insurgency in northern Mozambique. He made his comments this past Wednesday after meeting with Emmerson Mnangagwa from Zimbabwe. At State House in Harare, Masisi said his talk with Zimbabwe's president was dominated by the situation in Mozambique. I've reported to President Mnangagwa the contents of the discussions with President Ramaphosa, and we've formed views as a troika. One of them will result in taking this further so that we as SADC respond in a helpful manner to ensure that we assure the integrity and sovereignty of one of our own, never to be assaulted by dissidents, rebellious non-state forces that undermine the democratic credentials and peace of the region. Since 2017, an Islamist insurgency has raged in Mozambique's oil-rich Cabo Delgado province. Well, 3 years too late. Meanwhile, we have confirmation now that the South African Air Force has, in fact, repatriated South Africans from this situation in Mozambique. This past Tuesday, the South African Air Force, according to the Daily Maverick's Peter Fabricius, repatriated six nationals who had fled the insurgent attack, and they also brought home the remains of South African Adrian Nell, who was killed at the Amarula Lodge as vehicles tried to escape surrounded by these insurgents. A South African Air Force aircraft flew to KZN, where Nell had lived, and then to Gauteng. And the officials of the Department of Health conducted COVID-19 tests. Well, thank God they did that. Leave people to die in insurgency, but make sure you give them a COVID test when they come back. DERCO announced that it so far accounted for 43 of the South Africans who had been in Palma during the attack. That included Nell, the only South African so far known to have died. South Africa's High Commissioner of Mozambique, Sipwe Nyande, the retired general officer, told David Maverick they are still trying to count for a further 10 to 15 South Africans. That's disturbing. 2 days before Niger was to experience its first ever democratic transition from one elected leader to another, never occurred in 60 years of independence for the country of Niger in the Sahel region. Never occurred. 2 days prior to it, what happens? An attempted coup. 3 o'clock in the morning, gunfire starts, goes for at least 90 minutes. 2 days before transition. The attempted coup led to multiple arrests in the city, and order was restored in a short period of time. However, it left a lot of people shaken about the state of Niger's security forces and how reliable they are to the Republic. Mohamed Bazoum sworn in as Niger's president amid tensions. Dozens of foreign dignitaries attended the ceremony in Niamey, taking place 2 days after the government said it foiled a coup attempt. Mohamed Bazoum has promised to improve security and education while being sworn in as Niger's new president in the country's first democratic transition of power since independence in 1960. The inauguration ceremony took place on Friday, the 2nd of April, in Niamey, attended by dozens of foreign dignitaries, including government representatives from 20 countries. Security measures were at their highest level, with armored vehicles and pickup military cars loaded with machine guns deployed in the city center. The 61-year-old Bazoum won a contested presidential runoff in February to succeed Mohamed Issoufou, who also recently received the Mo Ibrahim Prize. I have to tell you that having lived in Niamey, I can only imagine this is a frightening situation. There aren't much in the way of urban development there. There are some large buildings, but they're far spaced apart. And if there were gunfire and an attempted coup going on, it could be quite frightening for residents as you really have a hard time finding any kind of cover in that city. And in hardly a surprising development, researchers have uncovered more subterfuge at YouTube. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Not only are they destroying people's accounts and their businesses with their bizarre censorship that's taking place right now, they have also been playing political games. And the evidence is there for all to see. Those paying attention know that the actions of Disney have irritated millions of people, tens of millions of people. And every time Disney puts up a video, they get far more dislikes than likes. The same thing has happened to the Biden administration as efforts to pretend that Joe Biden was popular and that he actually received 80 million votes continue apace unhindered by the big tech companies that want you to believe the nonsense that they've passed along to us. YouTube deleted 2.5 million dislikes from Biden White House videos, data indicates. YouTube has deleted 2.5 million dislikes from videos on the official White House channel of President Joe Biden, according to data collected and posted online by a researcher. YouTube recently announced it's testing a new page design that hides the dislike count. No surprise. No surprise. The Google-owned video platform allows users to give videos either a thumbs up, a like, or a thumb down dislike. For at least 2 years, it's been a policy to remove likes and dislikes that YouTube considers to be spam. We have policies and systems in place to ensure that the engagement on YouTube is authentic and remove any fraudulent metrics, a YouTube spokesperson told Epic Times via email. But when asked, wouldn't go into details on what criteria used to make these calls. The channel has posted more than 300 videos that have garnered nearly 3.7 million dislikes, of which nearly 2.5 million were removed, according to data posted on the website 81m.org. The author of the website started to track engagement on January 26 and has published all the data as well as his methodology used to collect it, but wouldn't comment on his or her identity when asked by email. No wonder you wouldn't want to be targeted by these tech oligarchs. YouTube is deleting close to 8,000 dislikes per video on average. Not a single like was removed, the data indicates. Interesting that. 8,000 dislikes per video removed, but not a single like removed. Even after the interventions, the videos have nearly six times more dislikes than likes on average. Without intervention, the ratio would have been 17 dislikes for every like. Wow. Posts on social media indicate that some supporters of President Trump make a point of disliking Biden White House videos. The videos often get thousands of dislikes shortly after popping online, only for a portion of the dislikes being deleted later. Well, the real question is here, how much of the videos were actually watched? Do people just go and put a dislike and not watch the video? That would be an indication, you know, of that people are not liking and not actually watching the video. I see that on my videos. Racist bigots and trolls come to my channel and they put dislikes on before the video even airs. So that would be illegitimate. That's the fair argument if YouTube was taking that approach, but they're not. I've actually watched these garbage videos from the White House, and I've disliked several of them. I'm sure they took my dislikes off, but I actually watched the videos. So that's not legitimate, but that's what YouTube is doing. That's what they're doing in their great purge. And if they think that they'll be able to continue this indefinitely, one day they're going to wake up and their business model is going to be eviscerated because of their actions. What are they so afraid of? People don't like the Biden White House. It's no surprise. Why are you trying to distort the narrative by controlling the narrative? Let people have their say. They're not harming anyone by disliking the White House video. That's the thing. YouTube claims endlessly that its standards are there to protect the community. Protect them what? From the truth? You don't want people to know that people don't like the Biden White House? Why? You were happy letting people know that no one liked the Trump White House. What's the difference between the Manchurian cadaver and the Don? Zimbabwe has outlawed the importation of vehicles older than 10 years in a move that's meant to revitalize the local motor industry, reduce the import bill, and cut greenhouse emissions. Well, to be fair, older vehicles do emit more greenhouse gases. That's a fair point. The import cost of shipping hard currency outside the country, that's a fair point. And revitalize local motor industry, seriously? There's virtually no industrial activity taking place in Zimbabwe. There's not much of an auto industry there. So banning the import of used cars is only going to harm the poor and those with less resources. And why is Zimbabwe worried about carbon emissions when its economy is moribund and its people are starving? That's a fair question. Under Statutory Instrument 89 of 2021, which came into effect on Friday, the 2nd of April, second-hand vehicles manufactured 10 years ago, except commercial vehicles and those for agricultural purposes, will no longer be permitted into the country. Critics say imports of substandard used vehicles are contributing to road carnage, as well as worsening pollution that hampers efforts to mitigate the effects of climate change. The new law is expected to drive the demand for locally produced vehicles. Once again, there are virtually no locally produced vehicles. As far as road safety, it's a fair point, but banning cars isn't a solution to improve road safety. Vehicle inspections, requiring people to inspect them by legitimate road inspectors to make sure they're roadworthy, that's an answer. I mean, if somebody wants to import a 1965 Corvette, did they make Corvettes in 65? I think they did. A 1965 Corvette, they shouldn't be banned from importing it. That's a collector's item. Why would you do that? That's idiotic. I appreciate the effort to keep substandard cars out of the country, but you do that by inspecting them when they come in. If they don't meet standards, then you don't accept them. It's not complicated. This is yet another example of government overreach controlling people because it thinks it knows the answers. It doesn't know the answers. Do your job, ensure a level playing field. You do that by inspecting the vehicles and making sure they're roadworthy. If they are, you allow people to buy them. As far as climate change, seriously, you're worried about your carbon emissions from a country that has virtually no industrial base at this stage? That's just ludicrous. You could completely shut down Zimbabwe, take every Homo sapien out of the country, all 14 million of you, relocate you elsewhere, and it would have zero impact on carbon emissions on this planet. What a pathetic joke and excuse. Eswatini has begun its COVID-19 vaccination ahead of the Easter holiday. On the 31st of March, the Eswatini government finally started its long-awaited national COVID-19 vaccination program. The national campaign started with people above the age of 60 getting AstraZeneca immunization. At a press briefing, Acting Prime Minister Thembu Masuku said, "It is encouraging to note that elderly people are flocking to take the vaccine, which has proven to prevent disease, hospitalization, and deaths. Those of us who have taken the jab can assure all Swazis that the much-feared side effects are nothing we cannot handle." Julie Dlamini, 68, said she could not wait to get her jab to save her life from the deadly pandemic. "This pandemic has caused me a lot of pain." Dlamini, a devout Christian, said she has heard a lot of rumors about the end times associated with pandemic and the safety of the vaccine. "The government of the United Nations can't give us something that would kill us," she said. Fearing a third wave, the country's health ministry on Tuesday said the government has less than 200 active COVID cases. With 7 cases now confirmed on Tuesday, the caseload has reached 17,033 with 667 deaths and 16,481 recoveries. So Eswatini's vaccination program is underway now, and apparently a lot of people are quite happy about it. Zambia has lifted its onion import ban. That's right, Zambia banned the import of onions. Well, and yet more government overreach. Just weeks after the Zambian government banned importation of onions, potatoes, authorities have reversed the decision as shortages of commodities bite. Surprising, is it not, that Zambia can't produce enough of these items, yet the government seems to think magically by waving a wand, they can magically create a domestic market. Ludicrous. The decision was reached as part of an attempt to boost local agricultural productivity, but now the Ministry of Agriculture says the country has to urgently import 10,000 tons of onions. Zambian Fruit and Vegetable Traders Association President Bernard Sikunyongana commended the government for being responsive enough to review its decision. However, he said 10,000 tons of imported onions would be sufficient for 3 months' demand. Former National Union for Small-Scale Farmers and Zambia Director General Dr. Frank Kairula added that the government should find a way to balance imports and the need to boost local production of agricultural produce. "Government shouldn't have completely banned the importation, but put restrictions on what is coming in, meaning that a quota would be allocated." Once again, that is hardly a free market approach. Now, to be fair, fragile economies in Africa like Zambia's, which are subject to being flooded by countries that are more efficient and more effective at producing goods and services, puts them at risk. So even though I'm a free trader and a dyed-in-the-wool genuine capitalist, not these crony capitalists in the United States, South Africa, or in Europe, no, a genuine true capitalist in the mindset, the thought pattern of David Ricardo and Adam Smith. Even though that's my feeling on the marketplace, I do understand and appreciate when countries like Zambia will impose tariffs or quotas to prevent goods from flooding into the marketplace. I don't condone it, but I certainly understand it. But this was an idiotic decision, which has backfired and left people in a desperate situation trying to get commodities, whose prices no doubt have skyrocketed as a consequence of government action, artificially blocking the importation of onions and potatoes, staples in Zambian diet. Angola anticipates seeing $67.4 billion of investment in its oil sector over the coming 5 years. This is a lot of money, but not an unusually high amount for Angola, as Angola has long had this oil industry in which the MPLA government has managed to survive for decades, living off the revenue from the oil industry. According to the National Agency of Oil, Gas, and Biofuels, the ANPG, planned investments for currently active oil concessions will amount to approximately $67.4 billion over the next 5 years, of which the state-owned Songinal will account for $16.8 billion. So nearly $17 billion of that investment will come from the state-owned parastatal Songinal. The rest will come from outside private actors. Veterans will not allow King Gab to be removed by force. President of Namibia's National Liberation Veterans Association, the NNLVA, Ben Shikongo, says President Hage King Gab should be allowed to finish his second term as head of state. Shikongo made his remarks during a commemoration of the Battle of Nkanja this Friday, the 2nd of April. According to Shikongo, those who are trying to unseat the president will not succeed. "Fighting for positions will not take us anywhere. It doesn't work. I don't want to talk about those who have already abandoned their party. All of us cannot be presidents," he said. "If you think a particular leader or the president is not good, why did you vote for him? You voted for him. Now you want to remove him? It won't happen. Over our dead bodies, we still have energy." Well, that threat of violence should be addressed by law enforcement in Namibia. Now, perhaps it's just political hyperbole, and he will never back it up by actual action, but who are you, Mr. Shikongo, to make such threats? You clearly don't understand politics or democracy, and you're living in the big man complex world where you seem to think that the position is someone's because they inherited it, they deserve it, or whatever. No. If, in fact, President Kangab is complicit or committed crimes, he should not be allowed to complete his term, and whatever democratic legal processes exist to remove him from office should be pursued. If, however, he's not done that, then there's no reason for anyone to try to remove him, even though he's wildly unpopular. Having received the lowest percentage of the popular vote of any presidential candidate for SWAPO since independence, at just 57% of the vote in the last election. Today, he'd be lucky to get 37% if we had an election this very moment. But it is disgraceful to see a veterans organization use its reputation and its prestige, assuming it has some, to threaten the public in this fashion. That's not the role of veterans. You have no special status because you served. You have no special status because you defended your country. No, you do not. And you certainly have no special status to undermine the rule of law. The International Monetary Fund has approved Namibia's $271 million loan. That's 4 billion Namibian. This follows the fund's deliberations on Thursday, almost 11 months since an application was made in May of last year. That's a long time to get this loan approved. The fund said the loan will help the country address urgent balance of payments and fiscal financing needs stemming from negative impacts of the pandemic. These, among other things, including the purchasing of vaccines and rollout of the vaccine campaign, which is needed to mitigate the severe economic impacts of the pandemic, is what the fund said. So the IMF has advanced Namibia $271 million. Namibia's defense minister, Peter Vilholt, is in hot water over a purported foreign offshore bank account. Fresh revelations linking Minister of Defense and Veterans Affairs Peter Vilholt to an offshore bank account in Hong Kong have brought to the fore a decade-old corruption case which has haunted the former Navy commander for years. The case involves bank accounts in Hong Kong that were investigated as being part of alleged kickbacks linked to the $1.8 billion arms tender for the Namibian government around 13 years ago. Despite strong evidence, Namibian authorities appear to have swept Vilholt's involvement in the case under the carpet. His then-boss, retired Lieutenant General Martin Shally, former Defense Force Chief, was forced to retire from his position in 2011 by former President Pohamba due to the investigation into the kickback allegations at the time. This week, Windhoek Mayor Job Amapanda produced a statement from the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank Corporation Limited, branded as HSBC. The statement is addressed to a Mr. Vilholt Peter Hafani, dated 11 September 2020. The statement is of a unit trust account from the bank's Lyndhurst Terrace branch and contains $194,319 U.S. in savings. The question asked is, how did... They're calling him Abacha, as in Sonny Abacha. How did Abacha Viho manage to score these millions he is hiding in foreign bank accounts in Hong Kong? Amupanda asked on his Facebook account. Now, my question is, how did Job Amupanda, the mayor of Windhoek, the newly installed mayor of Windhoek, get access to someone's private bank statements? Is there criminal action involved in that? We have to also ask questions of the mayor of Windhoek, what's going on here. When he talks about millions, of course, the $195,000 or so is actually 2.8 million Namibian dollars with the exchange rate. Some multinationals, rich individuals, and politicians often use offshore companies to carry out dubious deals using seemingly legitimate company stock with dummy directors, company secretaries, and shareholders. Boy, it sounds like South Africa's broad-based black economic empowerment scheme. It's racist scheme. Asked about the purpose for the Hong Kong account, Vilholt insisted yesterday that there is separation between his political and private life. I became a minister in 2020 and executive director in 2017. Before that, I've been a private citizen like everyone else, he told the Namibian. I've had that account for over 12 years now. I suppose what I do with my money is my prerogative. Vilholt's 12-year-old Hong Kong bank account coincided with an arms deal corruption investigation into how Chinese state-owned weapons company allegedly bribed Shally. Court documents in Shally's 2009 money laundering case placed Vilholt at the center of a potential kickback scheme with Chinese arms company Polytechnologies. The Chinese firm Polytechnologies scored an arms supply contract of $126 million U.S. with the Defense Ministry and Veterans Affairs in 2008. At the time, Vilholt was a commander of the Namibian Navy. As one of three service chiefs, he was also part of negotiation with the Chinese arms company. And the corruption scandals continue to unfold, or alleged corruption scandals, in Namibia endlessly. Fish rot. Now, President Kangab accused, and we have to give credit to the Namibian. The Namibian is doing a very good job, best it can, of investigative journalism, exposing these activities across the SWAPO government. Really sad what's happening there. And there you have it, folks. Today, the 3rd of April, 2021, one day before Easter Sunday, for Christians around the world about to celebrate the resurrection of Christ on the 4th of April this year. Happy Easter to you. Thank you for tuning in to Indaba African News of the Day. Take care of yourselves. God bless. And we'll catch you here next time on Chris White Africa.